From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast, episode 148. I'm Justin Spears here with Michael Lev. It is Monday, which means Kevin Sumlin had his pre-bye week press conference. Usually it's always an opponent here, but Arizona, they go into a bye week.
Arizona is the opponent.
Arizona's the opponent.
They're working on themselves. Which has kind of been like, it's kind of been the theme for a long time now, right?
Yes.
It's this their internal focus. How can we get better? Let's ignore what the record is. Let's ignore who the opponent is. Let's just work on us, right? And it's worked pretty well, right? I mean, they've rebounded from being 3-5 and, you know, maybe thinking this thing was going to go south to being 5-5 and being in contention to win the division.
How have you assessed the last month or so? Because I feel like a month ago we were sitting here saying, well, Khalil Tate's not healthy. Arizona's quarterback situation is kind of murky right now. Even the team itself was like, are they going to win another game? Well, sure enough, they put together wins against Oregon and Colorado. And when we talked about the bye week a month ago, it was like, oh, it's so far away. Arizona's going to limp into the bye week. They're not limping into the bye week.
They're strutting into the bye week. I actually think, you know, we talked about the Oregon game. Was it the turning point of the season? Maybe the UCLA game was the turning point in the season, right? Really good performance on the road, losing by 1 point to a pretty, you know, a well-coached team, right? A talented team. You'd say a more talented roster than Arizona without Laith Freck and without Khalil Tate, okay? So that happened. And those guys sat out. Got a chance to get healthy for these last two games. Two of their five most important players, you would say?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, certainly two of their three or four most important offensive players. So I think we should have maybe seen it coming based on that performance, right? I mean, they easily could have won that game, you know, with a first-time starting quarterback, right? Shuffled offensive line. Is that the game that Lorenzo Burns missed, too? Yeah. That was, right? And also Tim Huff got kicked off the team or quit the team or whatever happened with that whole situation. So consider all of that stuff. Lose by 1 point. That was probably more of a confidence builder than we talked about or that they let on. But I think that's a game we might look back on it and say, you know what? That's where things started to turn for this program.
Crazy to think that a loss would be a turning point. You never normally hear that.
But that can happen in college football. Like, I think about, let's say, Syracuse. Remember they had that game earlier this year where they almost beat Clemson?
Yeah.
Syracuse is, I don't know if they've lost since. I know they're ranked, like, in the top 20 and having a really good year. But sometimes, especially in college, on the road, you have a really close loss like that. It can serve as a moral victory. They would never say it after the game. But you can see the effect that it's had.
Arizona, they're coming off a win against Colorado, and it was a close one. I mean, it wasn't like the blowout win that they had against Oregon a couple weeks ago, but Colorado came in and they tested them. However, you posted this video. It was essentially like the play of the game. Arizona, they're up, and they need to get a few first downs, run out the clock, and then they seal the deal. Well, they're backed up in their own end zone. They're at the 2-yard line. J.J. Taylor has, I'm not going to say the run of his life, but he was able to move the chains, keep the drive alive, and that was when Arizona ran out the clock. You said that was probably the most important play of the game.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of important plays in the game, but if he doesn't make that first down, they're punting out of their own end zone, right? There's plenty of time left. I mean, Colorado's going to get the ball at the 50 or closer, or who knows, maybe the punt gets blocked, safety. I mean, anything could happen in that situation, so... You know, it's 3rd and 9 from the 2, and they run the ball, kind of play it safe, which is probably a good idea. And he gets hit at the 7, keeps his balance, puts his, you know, his, got the ball in his left arm, puts his right hand on the ground, and he basically, like, bear crawls for another 10 yards. You know, I don't know if it's bear crawl or military crawl. I don't know. It's the sort of thing, like, you might do at a company picnic, right, and have some sort of race. And I think you would want JJ on your team, right? Like... It's like I wrote the story about JJ for last week, and his high school coach told me how they would have a flag football game at the end of every spring practice. And, like, you couldn't pull the flag from JJ, right? No one could get close to him because he's so elusive, but he also has tremendous balance.
Yeah.
He was he did gymnastics when he was a kid. You saw the leap into the end zone the previous week. He starts out running low because he's like 5'6", but he can get really low and he can get underneath your pads like nobody else. It was weird. He had a fumble right around that same part of the field, you know, earlier in the game, and then he of course redeemed himself in a big way. And then his 39th carry out of 40 was his longest one of the day, 21 yards.
You know, there were two things out of that Colorado game that, looking back, I'm like, I didn't think we'd be sitting here talking about this. One, a tight end reception.
Right.
Bryce Wilma had the 17-yard catch, and I almost had to do a double take it looking at the numbers. Like, wait, that's 81, right? That's the tight end? Wow, a tight end makes a catch. And number two, Nathan Tilford got into the game, a running back who was once a four-star recruit, expected to have a prominent role with Arizona, and he hasn't been able to crack the rotation at all. Well, this past Friday, he was able to make his debut. But Kevin Sumlin also said that he's a guy that we could rely on down the road here.
It was interesting to hear the extent to which Kevin talked about Nathan Tilford today, right?
Yeah.
Like, it made it sound like, you know, we might need this guy. Because Gary Brightwell missed the game because of a sprained ankle, and Kevin said, we don't know, you know, what the status is of Gary moving forward. They're practicing, what did he say, today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Then they'll have the weekend off and, you know, come back next week. So it's kind of TBD for Gary. Anthony Mariscal came in. He did a nice job on the one carry he got. It was a 3rd-and-1, and he gained 9 yards and a first down. I'm pretty sure there was a missed block on Tilford's run. Someone got a clear shot and tripped him up, or he might have scored.
Yeah.
There from the 2-yard line. Then they did the little play action, little quick hitter to Sean Poindexter. But I mean, not only did he not crack the rotation, he wasn't even dressing.
Yeah.
You know, he was way down the depth chart, number four at best, maybe number five, because I think Brandon Leone played the previous week, right, as the fourth running back. So, hey, you know what? He's only a sophomore, right? There still can be future opportunities, whether it's here or elsewhere. As someone mentioned, a lot of talent, right? And the consistency part is maybe what's been missing. And also there was a lot of talk today about pass pro. You know, I mean, it's essential. There are a couple great plays in the game against Colorado where J.J. Taylor made a critical block in pass pro that led to a deep completion down the field. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to recognize that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, as Coach Sumlin said, I mean, there's so many different blitz packages mm-hmm. that teams bring these days. And teams switch from a 3-man front to a 4-man front or vice versa right before the snap. So there's a lot of, like, you have to recognize who's coming from where. And the way he explained it was the running back almost has to be like the quarterback in terms of being able to see the front, see what's going on, and figure out what's going on. And that's difficult, right? And maybe that's the area where Nathan Tilford is struggling a little bit.
How would you assess the secondary for Arizona right now? Because Jarius Wallace, you know, he came into the game, and there was a couple times where a wide receiver just kind of burned him. There was one where he went up and tried to make an interception, but the ball went almost like right through his hands. Wide receiver was able to pull it down and run for 40-plus yards. I mean, how do you just assess the secondary?
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of a revolving door at a lot of places, right?
Yeah.
You thought coming into the season that Jace Whitaker would be kind of the leader of that group, and he's played one series. He had a hamstring injury, missed the first two games, came back for Southern Utah, made a tackle, hurt his elbow. And we haven't seen him since. We've seen him dressing and warming up, but as I understand it, like, he can't tackle, like, because of that elbow injury. So, you know, I'm pretty skeptical about him coming back this year. I mean, maybe he can for the last couple games, maybe not. He has preserved his redshirt year because of the number of games left.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's made only one appearance, so he can conceivably come back next year if that's something that he wants to do. Maybe I'll try to dig into that mm-hmm. and see what I can find out. Lorenzo Burns and Demetrius Flanagan Fowles have been kind of the constants back there. I think Lorenzo Burns has had an underrated season. Doesn't have an interception. He led the team last year with 5, but does have the most pass breakups, and he's always in those one-on-one situations, right? Like, Marcel Yates trusts Lorenzo Burns. Like, we are going to put you on that island, and you're just going to deal with it. Demetrius has improved a ton since the beginning of the season, right? Like, I'd say he might be the player who's improved the most since week one.
Yeah.
He struggled against BYU. I think he gave up at least one touchdown, a couple long passes in that game. He's gotten better. Scotty Young's return, I think, has helped a lot. But then you saw what happened when he went out. Jarius came in, and there was a drop-off. We saw Isaiah Hayes walking around here when we came over, and I was thinking to myself, they could use him, right? We don't know what his injury was. He got hurt in that Cal game when that guy blindsided him on the punt return. That would be a nice piece to add to the mix. Then Azeezy Hearn, who's a walk-on, who really hadn't done all that much as far as playing cornerback, has been pressed into duty. We mentioned how Tim Huff is no longer on the team. I mean, Azeezy played almost every snap. I don't recall seeing a lot of Mackenzie Barnes out there, do you?
No.
They pretty much said, Azeezy, you're going to be the guy on the other side. He's a little handsy, and he got whistled for it a couple times in the game. He grabs a little bit too much for my liking. I think he needs to be coached out of that. But, considering the situation that they're in, they lost Malcolm Holland and Sammy Morrison in the preseason, right? A couple of veterans who you could have thrown out there to undisclosed injuries. Jace Whitaker, and that's three veterans. Bring in Tim Huff. He's no longer around. Yeah. They've had to throw these guys into this situation. And considering all that stuff, they've done okay.
Absolutely. So one thing, we're just going back to a month ago, I didn't think we'd be sitting here talking about Arizona being tied for first place in the Pac-12 South. With technically, because with ASU beating Utah, it makes the South standing is more interesting. And
it sure does.
I don't know. I think this bye week could also come in at a good – it comes at a good point because now we can wait for another week of Pac-12 play to pan out, and then we could see where Arizona ranks. But, I mean – all things considered, Arizona being tied for first place in the Pac-12 South at this point in the season, I think is pretty decent.
Yeah, no kidding, right? I mean, who could have seen this coming? What's weird about their season is they went 1-2 in the non-conference, right?
Yeah.
Which hasn't typically happened around here. I think Rich Rod lost like one non-conference game or something.
Just the BYU opener.
The BYU game. Like, he almost always won those games. So they would go into Pac-12 play with a cushion and maybe a different kind of level of expectations as Nathan Tilford, the aforementioned running back, comes walking up the ramp there in the weight room. So I think the expectations were a little bit different, right, because of the preseason. And you didn't really think about it. Like, I don't think I mentioned it in a single game story. Like, oh, this is where they are in the Pac-12 now, because it just didn't seem relevant, right? Who's even thinking about this? But now they've got a chance. I mean, I still think it's a long shot because they'd have to win out in all likelihood, which means winning at Washington State. Now, Washington State did not play great on Saturday night against Cal. They easily could have lost that game. But, you're going to have some letdown type situations. I think USC, based on the schedules of all the teams and the fact that Tyler Huntley's out for the season for Utah, is probably going to win the South. But, it's nice to be in the conversation, right?
Man, wouldn't it be something if somehow Arizona ASU that not only clinched the bowl game, but if Arizona lost to Washington State, they would essentially kind of be out of contention, right?
I don't know. I don't know. If everyone loses, that kind of thing. I haven't looked at those scenarios, right? So I'm not sure.
A lot of what ifs.
Yeah, there's a lot of what ifs. But I don't know, it's possible, I guess, that game could come down. That game could decide the division.
Yeah.
Right? Which happened in 2014.
14.
Right? Yep. And Arizona won, and then they got killed by Oregon in the in the Pac-12 championship.
They got Mariota'd.
Yeah, they sure did. I don't know. For some reason, I don't see that happening to this team, even though they have been blown out a couple times this year. I kind of like the resilience I've seen from them lately. That game the other night against Colorado, that was the first time this year that the other team has scored first, and yet Arizona has won. That to me says something about your character, and I don't think we saw that from them earlier in the season. Mm-hmm.
And and you talk about resiliency with the personnel that Arizona has. We were sitting here talking, well, Arizona doesn't have the personnel. Can they really compete in the Pac-12? And then they're kind of down right now. How are they going to be able to bounce back? Well, they put together not only a close fight on the road at UCLA. You talk about the turning point of the season. But then they come back. They beat Oregon at home. Easily beat them. And then they held off a Colorado team who was once viewed as a possible Pac-12 South contender. So, I mean, talk about resiliency. Arizona this year making things a little interesting.
Yeah, credit to Kevin Sumlin and his staff, right? Yeah. Credit to the players. I mean, this, like I said earlier, this easily could have gone the other way. Right? They could have said, you know what? It's just not happening. We're going to just play young guys. We're going to rebuild. I mean, have you ever heard Coach Sumlin say at any point, like, you know, these aren't my guys, or we'll be better when I get my guys in here? No, he said, these are my guys. We have the guys that we have, and we're going to make the best of what we have. He might be thinking, you know, I need my own guys, yeah, or I need more good players in here, but he hasn't said it.
I think that's
meaningful.
Well, he also said at the beginning of the year that these guys didn't sign up for me, and I think he knows that. There's obviously a mutual respect between the players and the new staff, and I think they're starting to kind of figure things out. I mean, it might be a little too late in the year to be thinking about a possible Pac-12 or a spot in the Pac-12 championship, but a first-year head coach being in this position, I would say Kevin Sumlin met the expectations, right?
If they end up at 6-6, which is probably the most realistic outcome, right? They're 5-5, lose at Washington State, maybe come back here and win against Arizona State, go to a bowl game. You know, viewed in the context of what our preseason expectations were, that's a disappointing year. But if you reset the expectations after they started 0-2 and got hammered at Houston and looked like they didn't even belong on the same field, it's not that bad, yeah. Right?
Yep. Kevin Sumlin was asked today what he would be if he wasn't a head football coach. And he said he doesn't know because his mom would.
You're going to put me on the spot.
Exactly. His mom would want him to be something else. If you weren't.
Oh, if me. Okay. If, I was going to say, you thought you were going to ask me if Kevin Sumlin wasn't a coach, what would he be?
No. If you weren't in your current position right now, what would you be? What would your career?
I would say probably like teaching or coaching, something of that nature. Like my son's in Little League. I'm not in an official capacity, sort of like the volunteer assistant kind of thing. But I enjoy that quite a bit. I think I've mentored a lot of people in the business, including Justin Spears over here. And I've always kind of found that to be rewarding. So I would say something in the teaching or coaching realm, mm-hmm. most likely.
Really good teacher, by the way. You taught me a lot.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. So teaching would be totally appropriate for me. Another like totally low paying job where you're working crazy hours and you're all stressed out all the time. It makes sense, right?
I know one thing you really taught me is you never go to Chinatown on Christmas Day because you
was it Christmas Day or Christmas Eve?
It was Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because that's Michael and I, we were waiting in line for an hour. And any place we went to, it was like, oh, it's going to be an hour and a half.
In San Francisco, right? Yeah. We were there for the Foster Farms Bowl, and it was Christmas. And we're like, we got to find a place to eat. Oh, Chinatown. Everything will be open. Well, of course, everybody in San Francisco had the same exact idea. So it was a bit challenging, right?
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. You can subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts, or you can download the Wildcaster app available on the App Store and Google Play. For Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.